So welcome to the Retail Risk podcast sponsored by Sensormatic. And I'm absolutely delighted to be joined by Brand Elverston. Today, Brand, it is a real pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you, Paul, for asking me to participate. I look forward to it.
Yeah, absolutely superb. Now, Brand, clearly, and I hope don't take this the wrong way, but a huge name in the industry. Lots of people will have come across you, known obviously for your time at Walmart. But I want to go way back to the beginning, if I may, and then just thread through and try and figure out how the Walmart journey started. So talk to me about University of Alabama and criminal justice.
Yeah, so ever since I was a kid, I wanted to be a police officer like a lot of kids. And we have in the U.S. what's called community college. And for a brief while when I was 19, I was a police officer for a couple of years and then decided to go and complete a four-year degree. Wound up at the University of Alabama and naturally wanted to major in criminal justice. From there, I was through the ROTC program, Reserve Officer Training Corps. I knew I was going on active duty. So that was predetermined at graduation. I went on active duty in January of 1984 and spent about a dozen years on active duty total. When I came back from Europe, I was stationed in Europe in Germany and came back and had a position at the U.S. Army Artillery School, which was the first time I had been on active duty with no troops. So I was an instructor at the artillery school. So I actually had time to think about, you know, do I want to do this the rest of my life or what do I want to do? And I chose to get a graduate degree, an MBA, thinking that that 11-year-old undergraduate degree would not be as marketable as it should be if I were to go into the civilian world. So I did that. And all through graduate school, students in the class were in the civilian sector. They were CFOs, they were buyers, they were manufacturing chiefs, all sorts of things. And that was completely new to me. So I think during that MBA program, I really made the decision that I want to do this. I'm kind of done with my time in combat boots and wanted to make the jump. Interestingly, and again, this was 1995, so pre-internet, pre-Google, so all the job searches, you remember the day actually you had to, you know, get some sort of printed trade journal, look for the jobs, sent out a bunch of resumes, and one went to Walmart. Because we had done several case studies as part of the MBA program about this company, Walmart, which frankly, I probably had heard of, but again, living in Europe, et cetera, that wasn't a place I was familiar with. So one day when I was teaching, the sergeant came in, slipped me a note, said, hey, this guy from Walmart is calling you. I'm like, well, tell him I'll call him back. So I called him back. And it happened to be an Air Force veteran who was one of the senior leaders at Walmart at the time and explained to me what the job was. And as soon as he said the word security, I almost hung up. And I've told this story a million times. I'm like, I narrowly missed the opportunity that would have, you know, taken over 22 years of my life simply from that one word. Because I thought, you know, I was a police officer, loved it. Was on active duty, got an MBA, undergrad in criminal justice, and I wanted to do more than what I thought that term meant. And I guess he read the tone of my voice, and he's like, before you hang up, let me explain what that means, because I had no understanding of what that meant in retail, private sector, none. So he explained it to me, long story short, went for the interview process. Back in the day, Walmart typically did not hire from the outside. So that was relatively rare and certainly not a non-retail person, which I was not. And, you know, the story goes that when I was talking to him, I was curious. I'm like, what made you call me? And he said, you know, I hate to tell you, after all that time, money, and long nights and weekends studying for an MBA, it was actually your 11-year-old criminal justice degree that raised the flag for us. And that's why we're hiring you. So I was like, well, the NBA won't hurt, but and I, as you know, spent 21 years at Walmart.
And who would have thought an Air Force guy actually called an Army guy?
Exactly.
Obviously, all of his buddies were fixed up elsewhere.
He turned out to be my boss at one time. As soon as, you know, I was in upstate New York, and then I went back to the home office after about 11 months in the field. And he was my boss for a while. He left and went to Home Depot, et cetera. But, you know, it's probably the same everywhere in the world, the inter-service rivalries of Air Force, Army, Marine Corps, or whoever it is, Navy. So, we got some mileage out of that. I'm like, I never had an Air Force guy convince me to do anything except to go to Walmart.
Oh, there you go. Of all the things to be convinced to do, though. So, I mean, quite a career, 21 years with Walmart. And I know, you know, a bit more than just security. Talk to me about the evolution, because Walmart as a business, I mean, it's clearly transformed in that time. Just give me a few staging posts and to the listeners. So, you know, year one in terms of what risk, loss prevention, you know, looked like, then the midpoint, and then really where it had migrated to as you came to the end of your time there. Just give us some comparisons, if you would.
Yeah, so in 1995, Walmart was a very different company than what it is today. And certainly the industry, the loss prevention industry broadly, was very much myopically focused on the theft component of lost profit. There was very little or a minority stake in total loss, which is now, we take it for granted. We understand what total loss is. So a lot of what I did in the early days at the home office were focused on theft deterrent packaging, fixturing, layouts of modular merchandise displays. Everything was pretty much dialed in on that malicious intent loss. And then probably around 2004, 2005, we got a vice president that was not a career loss prevention guy. In fact, he was a general counsel for Sam's. He was a lawyer. And necessarily, and it was a breath of fresh air, he understood the total loss component. He's like, okay, people steal stuff, but what about all of the short ships and the supply chain errors and, you know, all of the other things that happen within the retail box? So really, that's when we started shifting towards theft as a problem, but that is not the entire problem, simply because we began to study and understand through process analysis the gaps of the entire ownership of merchandise from when Procter & Gamble creates the purchase order through the cash register. And when we mapped all that out, and of course I'm abbreviating a ton of work and analyses, we began to expand the appreciation for the non-malicious losses. And that was about 2005. So in the United States, the loss prevention industry is getting much better, but largely was heavily populated by the malicious intent focused leadership. So it was a very hard sell to say, you know, I understand what you're saying about, you know, you can't put the new game cartridges on open display. I get that. But are there other technologies in the space that not only may prevent the malicious intent, but may also impact the fact that we never received it in the first place, but we paid Nintendo for it. So therefore it was a loss that had nothing to do with theft. It never came in the building. So that was a bit slow. And again, Walmart changed dramatically right about the mid 2000s, new leadership from the CEO down. Lee Scott came in, he was a logistics guy. So it's a very different company today. Today's environment in loss prevention is much more attuned to total loss and understanding that to be an effective mitigator of that loss, you really have to understand, you know, the bookend to bookend of the process. And that includes supply chain, that includes administrative errors, processing and accounting. So it changed a lot.
And understanding that it's more than just, you know, the guy or girl with a baseball cap running out with the VCRs, I think is the first thing to figure out. But of all of that time there, Is there one or two fundamental changes, or maybe one or two pieces of technology that came into Walmart that you went, actually, do you know what? Now that we've got X or Y, that really allowed us to understand, you know, internal theft or refund fraud? Or was there one or two big shifts that you go, actually, do you know what? That was one of the best investments we made, and all of a sudden we understood this. Because I love those, you know, sometimes you think you're going to get one thing with a piece of technology or a process, and you get something way bigger. So, you know, anything you can call out on that?
Yeah, there were several things we did that, you know, we had what the collateral improvements. So unintended, what you just said, we put in a software program to help us with analytics. And it was very robust, and it helped us understand that when we go into a store and we have, for example, I don't know, security, uniform security, we have locking showcases, we have cart locking mechanisms, and we have closed circuit TV. That analytics program helped us be able to isolate which of those four initiatives actually was moving the needle. And that helped us get a lot more specific in strategy by saying, look, you can't do cookie cutter, so I don't need a uniform guard in Bentonville, Arkansas, across from the home office, but I may need it in another more challenging demographic where we do have a disproportionate penetration of malicious intent. So the software and the analytics really opened our eyes to the total loss component, from which we were able to select technologies such as mitigating for self-checkout loss. So let's rewind to 2010-ish. Walmart really started to accelerate penetration of self-checkout. Well, with self-checkout, we all know comes loss. Be it intended or not, things happen. And it's usually at a higher rate than demand registers. So we were able to get our arms around and isolate that loss to self-checkout or the unmanned POS tender. And we were able to get technologies on board that Everseen is, you know, and it's public. They're in, I don't know, 2,000 odd Walmart stores. And they helped us be able to say, okay, we can, with a clear conscience, accelerate self-checkout without giving the store away because we have this technology. So at the time, Greg Foran, the Walmart US CEO, he's now the CEO of Air New Zealand. He was our CEO, and he drew a line in the sand, put the brakes on self-checkout until such time we get a technology that can help us mitigate the loss or at least provide visibility to the exposure. And we did that. We brought it on board, we hit the gas, and it helped us come to the table differently as loss prevention. Instead of saying, no, you can't do that, we said, absolutely you can, and here's the technology to help us do a whole lot more than just prevent Paul scanning one six-pack of beer and actually taking three. So back to the collateral comment, it helped us in customer service. Our engagement went up with the pay station attendant. We were engaging more with customers, and consequently, we saw we were bending the needle significantly in the loss exposure.
Yeah, and I think, you know, when you get that traction with a piece of technology, it gives you a spring in your step as well, doesn't it, in terms of pushing forward? I'm just going to introduce a brief word from our sponsors, Sensormatic, who are responsible for making this podcast possible.
Now, more than ever, retailers and shopping centers need to create efficient and safe shopping destinations that thrive in the most challenging of market conditions. Retailers need to be able to know exactly what merchandise is available on the sales floor and stockroom, to quickly identify and respond to shrink and shoplifting events, and to understand footfall and shopper density across their properties, and comply with regulations. Sensormatic derives new insights and outcomes from complex data streams to help retailers and shopping centers make better business decisions. Visit us at sensormatic.com to learn more.
So come on then, consummate professional, and you always recount stories, but give us a little snippet, a little car crash of a project, a little something that went on that you've never told anybody before. What, you know, you're out of Walmart now. You know, imagine there's just you and I talking.
Yep.
Nobody else around. So what's the one thing that was maybe forced on you that you had reservations or that you were thought, let's do this, it'll be fantastic, and it just went terribly wrong, or the little comedy story. What can you share with us today?
It's probably what everybody that I am friends with that left corporate. So, you know, nothing condemning Walmart, but it was liberating leaving the confines of a corporate culture. The do's and don'ts, the paradigms, whatever word you want to use, there were restrictions or guardrails around what you could and couldn't do, like any company. And it took me a couple of months out of being out of Walmart and out of that environment. And still to this day, Paul, it's funny, and I've been gone since March of 17. I still sometimes catch myself subconsciously saying, no, wait, we have to do. My clear head comes back. I'm like, I don't have to do that. I can engage with this guy. So creativity was greatly accelerated. And without any restrictions, being able to say, you know what I saw at EuroSys in February of 2019, that's an awesome technology, but have you ever talked to these guys? Because together you have a much more robust solution than you do independently. And by the way, it'll be easier to sell to a retailer. I don't need two suppliers, I need one now. You guys go back and figure it out. So that's probably my biggest enlightening, if you will, is the liberty and being much more creative. And the other part is, you know, Paul, it's funny, after that many years, and you mentioned it when we started, I did that for 20 years and made a ton of friends across the globe. And I'm finding some of the best advice I got when I was going through the thought process of really, do I want to leave, was don't be too quick to say no. Somebody calls you and you think, that's not in my wheelhouse. So artificial intelligence involved in that. In real estate, commercial real estate with some of these retailers involved in that. Health diagnostic kits, of course, COVID. All these sorts of things that you never would have thought in a million years when I was in that building. That's upstairs, or that's, you know, the health and wellness department or whatever. So that's probably the biggest change, is understanding that, you know, you probably have more to offer than you think you do, if you have enough patience to try and sort it out. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't, but the good thing is you get to engage with that. And to me, you know, that's a huge difference. It's exciting.
Well, I guess you were the go-to guy within Walmart that could get things done, but knew how to navigate the corporate beast. But now you are the standalone beast, if that's the right word. You can do whatever you like at this point. And I guess if you plug the military career on the front, you've had that, you know, enforced guardrail around,
yeah,
you know, where you could go, and you know, all bets are off now. So these bets are all off. You've got the consulting, the non-execs. So give us a flavor. What are you doing at the minute? What bits really exciting you? And, you know, is it new technologies that you're involved in? I know you just alluded to some areas there now, but what is Brand Elveston filling his days with at this moment? And it may be golf, and that's okay too, but, you know, I sense there's maybe more.
My passion really, you know, in about 2010, when that new vice president came in and he was willing to write checks on faith, which was very different for Walmart back in the day. He's like, okay, I don't understand what you're asking me, but if you think it's a good decision, let's try it. And we did that. We engaged with MIT, Massachusetts Institute of Technology, Lockheed, Boeing, California Tech, Caltech, DARPA, the R&D arm of the U.S. Defense Department. We engaged with what we called a ton of non-traditionals to, again, bring to the table those that may be doing interesting projects, but having no appreciation of how it may apply in a commercial sense in retail. And that was a long road to get there. And again, with the heavy restrictions, you know, Walmart, like most companies, they're not a VC, venture capital firm. They're not going to slide you a check for $20 million and then you come back in 5 years with hopefully something that works. It's a much more condensed cycle. But the interesting part is that passion never really went away. And I've known you a lot of years, Paul, and you remember, you know, that was always my, that's what excited me. And that very same VP back in the day during an evaluation, he's like, Brand, I can clearly tell what excites you and what bores the hell out of you. And it's the new technology, the innovative, it may or may not work, the edge of bringing things in. And, you know, you do that for so long, you become accustomed to that bureaucratic pace of, you know, umpteen approvals and capital requests. And it takes a lot of energy to get there. What's exciting now is I can engage with somebody at Eurosys or NRF or wherever, and it's immediate. So it's like, you know what, you got a great solution. You're a startup, so I'm not going to take you to the world's biggest. That's probably not a smart idea, because when they say go, they're going to want 100,000 widgets tomorrow. And if you're not ready, the deal is over. But it's more about bringing to bear that 20 odd years in retail experience at the world's biggest, all of the relationships I have around the world at different retailers that we work in collaborative partnerships, and then being able to cherry pick those technologies that we know have a shorter term application in retail. So, you know, getting it out of the hype cycle in the media and saying, you know what, actually that may work, or yeah, that's interesting, but let's wait. The one thing that really has accelerated the requests are, as you and I opened with, the discussion around COVID. That has accelerated the need for touchless, you know, all of the distance, all of the, you know, buy online, pick up in store, the non-brick and mortar traditional engagements. And those, I believe, are going to stick. There'll be some that'll go away. Honestly, none of us really know what it's going to look like. But if anything, it's helped because, you know, an unfortunate part of it is, and many retailers have experienced an increase in shrink during COVID because they're not engaging with the would-be thief because of distance and safety concerns. They've reallocated the payroll. I know a lot of the major retailers pulled those loss prevention staffers off their conventional role and put them on cleaning or stocking or, you know, whatever. And the silver lining with high shrink is usually that's when the retail leadership is more willing to write a check for something to fix it. So there's good and bad. Bad that it happened, but it could turn into exciting things for more exploration.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely spot on there. I think you know, the whole loss prevention risk team has got a real opportunity because, you know, it can expand its sphere of influence. There is a raft of new technologies because now customers are expecting a different level of safety when they shop, and some are requiring that and some don't want that. And so you've got to find a solution which keeps all of your customers happy, which gets thinking. And I think you're absolutely spot on to say, you know, shrink's gone up, retailers have got a challenge. That means funding is going to be made available. And I think everything, even down to, you know, the meet and greeters, how they interact, store security guards, we're expecting more from them. And that surely has to come with a bit more budget from the retailers instead of just, you know, diving to minimum wage at every opportunity. So yeah, I'm with you on the innovation. And actually just reminding me, you talking about all of those technologies, and I trying to think how many years ago it was, but I remember you and I talking, and I'm sure it was at the Savoy in London at a dinner. And you were talking about how you'd at Walmart were challenging the French perfume houses that if the product wasn't paid for, it just turned to water, that the TV didn't work until it was activated at home on, you know, producing a valid till receipt. And I just I remember thinking at the time, they're completely unreasonable requests, you might say. But if anybody can make them, Walmart was the organization to push back and go, you know, come on, guys. And, you know, things like that, I think, have driven the likes of, you know, Gillette and Apple to a degree, and some of these other brands are doing a little bit more to help the retailer. At least there now is Find My Phone and disable and delete your iPhone, deactivate it from afar. I mean, those things were non-existent for years.
Yeah, so the point of sale activation, specifically you're talking about that, you know, when you go to buy a phone, if you steal it, you don't have the unlock code because that prints on the receipt when you paid for it. That is a long road, and it got a little bit muddy in the industry with RFID. And then there was the question with the RFID industry, is there a way to inhibit the circuitry with an RFID chip? Because as you know, and the listeners probably know, that you know, the beauty of RFID is it's a specific license plate for that item. So it's unique. We know that item. But point of sale activation really it's still on a trickle feed in retail, which it kind of falls apart on the return on investment. So much like other technologies, we always said with the buyers, well, if we invest in this, you'll be able to do open sell. So anything that's high theft is, as we all know, is usually locked up. So the first thing a buyer wants to do is unlock it and theoretically increase sales. So we could always say, well, we're going to be able to incrementally increase your sales. But the things that a small handful of the retailers were experimenting with point of sale activation were items like laptops. Pretty expensive individual unit retail items. And over time, the actual return and increase in sales, because a laptop is not an impulse item. You don't walk past the end cap and say, oh, hey, there's a $900 laptop. Sounds good to me. It's usually something you're going in to buy specifically. So it's been slow. It really probably has most of its strength in combating fraudulent returns. In other words, we can tell whether it was ever purchased or not. But again, it takes industry leadership and collaboration among several retailers. And we had that years ago. It was Walmart. It was Gap. Believe it or not, they were very, very active, even though that's apparel. Best Buy, the DIY guys, Home Depot, Lowe's. And obviously, you know, our strategy was the more retailers we get on board in mandating it, then it makes more sense for Black & Decker or Steel or whoever to say, okay, if 60% of what I produce going to U.S. retail wants this, that's cost effective. If it's just Walmart, probably not, because we ran up against that very same pushback in the early days of EAS source tagging. So those kinds of technologies, you know, where the dispenser of perfume, it wouldn't be perfume unless you paid for it. What we found was that's really, as bad as it sounds, a bridge too far. And that's when we started engaging with DARPA, Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, to see if there were things they were working on in a military sense or a private sense, public sense rather, that we could apply. And it's a heavy lift, Paul. You know, it makes perfect sense. It looks great on a whiteboard, but boy, does it really, it takes work and collaboration and persistence. So it's still ongoing in the industry, and eventually we'll get there. What I think about COVID, I think if anything, that'll probably accelerate those desires for those types of technology because of everything that we've experienced in 2020. In the brick and mortar environment. So they're still out there. And that's still my passion. At some point that will become the norm. It'll become the new legacy solution technology.
That's what you're going to give the world of retail. Is it that's the next decade? We're going to have perfume that turns to Evian if you don't pay for it. And
that's right. That's exactly right.
TVs that, dial 911. That's got me the way forward. Exactly. Bran, one final question for you. It's been fabulous. Okay. Looking forward the rest of this year and next year, what are you most excited about? Be that opportunity within retail, technology that you see coming online, maybe something that you're working with that's coming online, but what's the bit that gives you hope that retail is going to recover from where it is at the moment?
It's probably two things. One that is in the process and is not new is artificial intelligence, machine learning capability to understand what the risk is and give us quantifiable ROI to be able to say that we know what the risk is, instead of back in the day, it was kind of like, well, you know, this is what it feels like. The second one is, and the one that is still yet answered, is if Paul walks into a retail establishment, you sign in to the Tesco.com website, you scan all your own merchandise, you throw it in a backpack, and you hit tender on your own device and walk out. We retail still don't have a solution for that that allows bigger box stores to deploy that customer service option, that omni-channel experience. And you know, there are a lot of complexities with it. We don't know, the retail wouldn't know if in fact you actually paid for it. if it's a mobile tender, you obviously don't have eyes on it with CCTV. So there are all sorts of risks. Adrian Beck wrote a white paper on it with retailers, Walmart being one, years ago, kind of putting out there that challenge, but it's still not solved yet. And that, you know, and this is public. That's why Walmart backed off of the scan and go, that scenario, because we couldn't get our arms around the risk. You know, you can say, Paul, that you have to, once you hit tender, now you have to go through this little alley in order to get out of the store. We know that's not going to happen. If I intend to defraud the retailer, I'm not going to probably follow the rules, but then we're putting that associate at the door or whoever at risk because we don't know you stole it. So the legal guys get involved and, you know, the privacy. So I put a piece out on LinkedIn, I don't know, 3 or 4 months ago, highlighting that exact scenario, that of all of the technology gaps that are out there today in the malicious intent space, the one yet answered is that. How do we mitigate the loss on true mobile shopping? The Amazon Go solution, you've seen it. You have one in London now, apparently. That's not scalable in a 200,000 square foot super center. It works. It's great. iFi out in Southern California, I saw them at EuroSys, a couple of years ago. It works. Cashierless stores work in that small box. The challenge is, how do you do that in a 200,000 square foot Walmart supercenter or a Home Depot? So that really is the one thing that if you had to say, Bran, what are your top three priorities, solving that, continuing to search the globe for a solution, it's that, because that will accelerate.
I think you're absolutely right. And the scalability is spot on. I think it was Carrefour in Belgium with the scan and go technology. They introduced a system whereby a randomizer, and they could set it between sort of, 5 and 25, would just randomly pull customers to have their scan and go products checked. And theoretically, you would think, because you only get stopped once every 20 times or 25 times, that it was a great piece of technology. But the negative perception that they got from customers, particularly if somebody happened to be stopped 2 weeks on the trot, then it was, well, you're stopping me because X, Y, or Z reason. I've got red hair, I've got blue hair, I'm this, that. And it was dropped fairly quickly. I think they backed away from some of their self-checkout. They came up with a hybrid solution where it was a self-checkout, but then I would actually go to a physical cashier to pay. And they did some research on how people, the sort of the ad hoc thief that might just forget the beer or the steak this week. But by physically going to a cashier to pay, the analysis there was that actually having somebody to take the payment was the process, was the solution. But the whole scan and go and the randomizing of the checking of the basket, the negativity was just off the chart. And like I said, they did it in their Belgium operations because there were some quieter stores for them, I think, to do it. And it clearly didn't go any further than that. But yeah, I mean, that's to your point, you know, if you can make that scalable to big box retail, then it's just going to transform. And then arguably stores become a more attractive place than online because the experience is better. And maybe that's the way the high street and the out of town fights back to the sort of the online juggernaut.
Yeah, Metro years ago, we were in Dusseldorf and we went to the Future store.
Yeah.
And that was the earliest I remember seeing the mobile. Actually, we had to sign out the manager's phone. That's how new it was because his device was the only one that did it. And on their front end, you may remember they had like five different checkout configurations, variations from true man to true mobile. And that I'm going to guess that would have been 2004, 2005. And it's still a problem. And big box retail still hasn't been able to accelerate because of that. You know, here in the US, we worked on that randomized audit so that if Paul, you know, once you sign in, you hit Tinder, you walk out, but we had it built in that every 10th trip, Paul's going to get an audit. If Paul, we did an audit and he came good, then we're going to put that to 1 in 20. And if he's still good, then it's going to be 1 in 30. But as it is in business, lawyers and privacy get involved. And before you know it, you've just got a ball of twine you can't undo because of the risk of what you just said. Is it profiling? Are we opening ourselves up to perceived or not profiling? So you go to the airport. You know, it happens. I tell the security guy, you know, I wish like heck I was playing the lottery because it seems like every time I come through here, I'm randomly selected for a further screening. And it's always when I'm cutting it a little bit close. So I get the frustration. You go to Cozumel, you get your bags, you get ready to leave. You got to smack a button. If it turns red, you go to the left and they tear your bag apart. But surely I got to believe that in today's world, if we can figure out machine learning and all of those sorts of technologies, if we put focus on it with the right firm and the right capital, we can solve for it. And it will really transform the shopping experience once we have assurance that you can come in with your phone, you do what you want, you hit pay, we're good, you never talk to anybody. I think that's the... that's really the big gap right now. So hopefully during the COVID experience, we've come to understand that this is one piece we can't roll out just yet until we get a solution, much like Everseen was on self-checkout. That allowed us to accelerate.
I think, you know, I look forward to getting on a flight to Texas to see your supermarket of the future with all of this technology there for us to play with to roll out. That'll be a flight worth taking. Brand, absolutely superb as always. Thank you very much indeed for being my guest on this week's Retail Risk podcast. It is always a pleasure.
It's great seeing you again, Paul. Thank you so much for including me, and I look forward to speaking with you in the future, man. Take care. Thank you.